All right. Well, if you are feeling uncommon, if you feel like you just can't find any sense in the world, we're here for you because this is Common Sense Ohio. You like that? See what I did there?
Dirt anyway, common.
Yeah. So here we are, April 16, 2026, Common Sense Ohio. Check us out at commonsenseohioshow.com where the backlog of episodes is there. I know you're going to go listen to them all. This day in history, as it turns out, Norm, the greatest pastime reached a milestone, baseball being the greatest pastime.
All right.
None other than the Cleveland Indians opened the season with numbers on the backs of their jersey, the first Major League Baseball team to do that. And they made it easier for the scorekeepers, broadcasters, and fans to identify the players. They won the game against the Detroit Tigers, by the way.
Did you say what year?
In 1929.
Yep. Wow.
An 11-inning shootout, 5-4. The Tribe wins. They're not the Tribe anymore, as it turns out, because that was...
They're the Guardians.
They're the Guardians. I don't know what they guard, but they're the Guardians. We're talking about the Indians, folks.
And at that time, the stock market was doing really, really well.
It was booming. And just think, numbers were going to be all the rage and by the end of that season in October.
A few more months and it all went to hell.
Right. So anyway, Ohio makes it big again and again and again. The other big milestone we just hit, of course, is April 15 was tax day. You know, so those of you who are lamenting that, we're here for you.
Yeah.
It made me think of a poem. Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me, because I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should be 5%. Should 5% appear too small? Be thankful I don't take it all, because I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
Well, at least you're not the walrus or the Eggman, Steve.
So. I'll tax the street if you try to sit. I'll tax your seat. If you get too cold, I'll tax the heat. If you take a walk, I'll tax your feet. I'm the tax man. I'm the tax man. Tax the rich, folks. That's the message of the day. Anyway.
Cuckoo, ca-choo, I'm the walrus.
That's the Beatles, by the way. Tax man. Yeah. 1966. That was August something, 1966.
Yeah. Yeah. Back when rock stars used to complain about the government, now it's, you know, if you listen to Bruce Springsteen, government's the solution to all our problems.
Yeah, fix it all.
We need more government. But back then, even the Beatles were like, yeah, we don't really need taxes.
Yeah, so. And then, they were talking about Britain, and it spawned. The British tax structure spawned one of the greatest rock and roll albums of all time, I think, which is the Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street. Check it out. It's phenomenal.
Well, also this day during the Revolutionary War period, the culminating events were happening in America that were consolidating more and more Americans against British oppression. More militias were being formed. And the only real specific thing that happened on this day was a loyalist privateer ship had captured off of Cape Hatteras one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence to be a man, not the president, James Buchanan. He wasn't born yet, but another James Buchanan. He and another owner of the ship were on board the Polly heading to Madeira, which is Portugal, and with grain and meats. And they were intercepted and taken hostage by a loyalist. The Brits would hire privateers. They would authorize, essentially, pirates to conduct British foreign policy, which, in the Straits of Hormuz might be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You know, hire mercenaries. And Steve and I could form a corporation and contact Pete Hegseth and say, hey, Pete, maybe instead of an American destroyer, it'd be the SS Common Sense out there with our drones and missiles, and we stop tankers, and we get to, get some of the spoils.
Yeah, I'll go.
That's how the British ran things.
I know. I'll go buy a Boston Whaler.
Yeah.
It's unsinkable. I remember the commercials.
Yeah, right.
And we'll go out and collect some taxes.
So, you know, and of course they would impress those sailors. They, you know, lots of bad things happen on the high seas there. So, you know, those kinds of things more and more turn the American public against the king.
Indeed.
Indeed. So.
So lots going on in the world. I mean, there's something going on over there in Iran.
Yeah.
And there's something going on in Iran.
Yep. And more things going on in Iran.
All right. Let's take it from there.
So I think this Trump blockade of the blockade, so it's a blockade of a blockade, is one of the most ingenious things I've ever heard of a president doing.
It really is.
It's incredible. The brilliance of doing, I don't know who at the Pentagon or if Trump came, it's incredibly a great idea. It's like, okay, Iran, we're not going to let you pick and choose which tankers get through the straits, and therefore you keep getting
$2 million a boat or something like that.
Yeah, it's something like we're denying them something like $430 billion a month by plugging up, you know, by not letting them sail from their ports to, say, China, North Korea, Cuba.
Right, and at the same time, Trump says to the world, never fear. Just come on over. We'll sell you plenty of oil.
We're your gas station.
Right. You come.
So in the now, Gulf of America.
In the Gulf of America. Right. They're coming to the Gulf of America to buy to get their oil. I mean, look, you just got to take your hat off to the guy sometimes. I mean, it just is. Or whoever came up with that.
Oh, I mean, it's something else. And basically, they are. I mean, I heard that 90% of Iranian oil ships through the straits. So they probably have some other means, maybe overland via pipes or something, out the other direction across another border to get some oil out. But I think this is going to get resolved because at the end of the day, to pay the IRGC and the mullahs enjoy their lifestyle and, you know, pay their troops, I mean, they need cash.
It's always about the money.
It's about money.
It's always about the money. And you're right. This is going to create some infrastructure. They'll start piping stuff around. I mean, whatever's going to happen. But in the meantime, we're the gas station, as you said.
And, yeah.
And I also hear that Israel is now going to come to the table. I think Trump announced overnight there's going to be talks. So look, stock market's up.
Yeah.
Oil prices, will start to drop.
Yeah.
And life will go back to normal.
The Israelis and the Lebanese government have not had official talks since, get this, 1982, and they're neighboring. That would be like us not having diplomatic relationship with Canada for...
Yeah, they're neighbors.
I mean, almost
34 years, it says.
I mean, it's crazy.
So Trump tweets or whatever he does, is social, whatever.
Yeah.
Trying to get a little breathing room between Israel and Lebanon. It's been a long time since the two leaders have spoken, like 34 years. It will happen tomorrow. Nice, says Donald Trump.
I mean,
it's pretty incredible, really.
It's incredible, and you know, long overdue.
It's like it would be hailed as one of the greatest political moves of all time if we're anybody except Donald Trump.
No question about it. The stock market yesterday. I don't know if you've checked out your 401k, but if you're just generally invested in a broad swath of the market, it hit a record yesterday. My portfolio is going crazy. It lost like 1 or 2%. Okay, for 1 month, went way down. All of the loss during this war has now been recouped in my portfolio plus some.
Yeah, well, I bought when it was down.
Yeah, good so for you.
I just happen to have
A little to play with.
A little disposable cash.
Good for
you. Look,
man.
I'm no millionaire, but I threw some. So look, because I knew.
That's when to buy.
Because I knew. Let's see. The United States is at war and oil is in question and all this is a problem. You know the stock market's going to go down. And I remember last time this happened, six months ago.
The panic selling.
The panic. And my buddy called me and said, I don't know what to do, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, dude.
Hang on.
I look at this like wholesale bargain pricing.
Right.
Go buy all the blue chips. Just buy all the blue chips.
Right.
Because they're going to go back to where
they're
were.
They're going to go back.
They're going to go back to where they were, which is what I did.
And oil. So we have this, we're sealing off the Straits of Hormuz to any shipments, and we're able to see if they, so if they're coming out of, say, Oman or Saudi Arabia or some other country that is in the Persian Gulf, we let those tankers and we let those ships through. It's just the ones, the Navy is keeping the ones where we can look at satellite, right? We know which ones are coming out of Iranian ports, and it's those ones we won't let through. And so right now, the price of oil, the international price for, they call it Brent crude, is 89. It was over 100. So despite Trump's, you know, blockade of a blockade, the oil price, the barrel price went down.
It's going to go down because he's taking away impediments to get oil. Like when, if Iran is controlling the purse strings of how much oil people can get, the price is going to go up.
Yeah.
If we are controlling that and we're letting it through, then the price will go down.
We're letting everybody through but Iran.
But Iran, right. Supply and demand. So the supply is back up, rock and roll.
So it's just incredible. I'm a little like J.D. Vance. He won't say it, but in his interview with Maria Bartiromo, she asked him directly, were you one of the people that cautioned against Trump going into Iran? And he didn't answer it directly, but, he said, well, you know, obviously I'm a team player. My advice to the president is between us. But, I had my reservations. I think we all did. Is this going to turn into a holy war? I think what Iran did to completely take off the idea that this is some kind of Christian crusade against Islam is they fired more drones and rockets at their fellow Muslim nations than they did at Israel or at us.
Yeah, so you hear tell, or at least there's chatter in the news that says all the surrounding countries are on our side on this.
Yeah.
You know, because of this, right? They're just tired of the big bully in the room doing whatever he wants to do.
I mean, refineries in places like Kuwait are on fire because Iran attacked fellow Muslim countries.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not making any friends. And, I think in a way that was a huge mistake on Iran's part, because if they wanted to drive a wedge between the Jews and Christians and the Muslims, they could have possibly made this into some kind of religious holy war, and they
completely blew that.
Right? You know, and I'm glad they did blow it. Steve, I wanted to follow up on something. So the last time we got together, we talked about this case on, anchor citizenship, birthright citizenship, and the very day I think that we were having Common Sense Ohio, they were actually debating, or they are actually arguing in the Supreme Court, Trump versus Barbara.
Yep.
And I just wanted to bring this one quote because I thought, Justice Alito, has this way of distilling a case down to like one question or one statement. He's really brilliant that way. And the notion of the way the 14th Amendment reads, it says that
persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States.
That's the key phrase, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And both the ACLU and the Department of Justice pretty much agree, based on previous interpretations of this amendment, that subject to the jurisdiction thereof means domiciled. So then you argue about what domiciled means. And what Alito asked of the ACLU attorney is, how can persons who are subject to immediate deportation be considered domiciles?
Well, it begs the question. It's a slippery question because,
If their
parents are subject to immediate deportation, but the response should be, look, as soon as they're born, they're not subject to deportation. They're citizens as soon as they're born. So it all happens at once. It would be my answer.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying there. I guess if it was that clean, right, then the phrase subject to the jurisdiction thereof wouldn't be in there. It would just see all persons who are born in the United States
are citizens. It implies.
But there's that phrase, and that phrase is an additional requirement.
What's interesting is this. The Supreme Court in its Second Amendment jurisprudence cases, and maybe some others now by now, I don't know for sure, has harkened back to something called a history, text, and tradition test. And the history, text, and tradition test is this idea that we're going to go back and we're going to look at the history of the constitutional provision.
The original
intent. And tradition.
Yep.
And what was it? What was the purpose of it? Now, the purpose of the 14th Amendment, this was a slavery, the end of slavery amendment.
A response to
13,
Dred
14,
Scott.
13, 14, 15, 16.
Which was an abortion of a decision.
Right. So the amendment was geared towards addressing slaves or freed slaves as a result of emancipation
and
the Civil
children.
War.
Yeah.
And their children, because the slaves were subject to the jurisdiction
exactly.
of the United States.
That's
and they were already born.
That's right.
Now, like lawyers tend to do over the years.
Right. Damn them.
I hate them. they sort of focused on this born, meaning born means, well, born right now.
Yeah.
And in the context of the 14th Amendment, it sort of meant that you're either already born or your parents were already subject to the jurisdiction of the United States because they were slaves.
Yes.
Or prior slaves.
Yes.
And you're right, it was designed to get rid of the Dred Scott. I mean, it was designed to sort of get rid of all the badges and incidents of slavery,
yes.
to use the Supreme Court verbiage.
Right. And it was one of a series of amendments.
13, 14, 15,
yeah.
16. Yeah. So, and that was the purpose of it. So I'd be curious to see if the court goes and utilizes that standard. And if they do, they're going to have to sort of get around that California, I forget what the Chinese immigrant case was.
U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark.
They're going to have to, I mean, that probably is going to have to get overruled. Or at least they're going to have to.
Alito distinguished that case because those people were subject to the jurisdiction.
Okay, so.
In other words, the parents of Wong Kim, okay, were here legally. They had legal status. So the question was, does their son, Wong, when he was born to people who were subject to...
So you could see...
You can distinguish that.
You can see...
Actually, Trump's attorneys at the DOJ cited that case as support for their position.
Fair enough. So you can see King Solomon here splitting the baby and
yeah.
saying, look, no pun intended, you can say, look, if the parents are here lawfully... Either as citizens,
green card holders, yeah.
student visas,
yeah.
whatever it
yeah.
is, then
anything but illegal.
Anything but illegal. Yeah. I can see. I mean, that's sort of where I thought this thing has been going all along.
Yes,
but I can also see another world where they say, "Look, this wasn't the amendment was not intended for this," and you might see some dissents along those lines.
Yeah.
But to get an accord, they're probably going to have to. There's going to have to be some baby splitting here.
Yeah, I think
by
right.
an accord, I mean some majority that's not a crazy plurality.
Yeah, and they may have to look at the history. I mean, basically, there were no anti-immigration laws prior to the 14th Amendment. Anybody who could get to America by any means could become an American.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really have like
we needed people.
We didn't have an Ellis Island or anything like that.
Well, and that's right on the heels of the Civil War, and we were bringing in people. Wasn't that the potato famine era too? So
yeah.
like we were bringing in people.
Oh yeah,
because
you had Irish brigades in the Civil
yeah.
War. These were Irish men who hadn't been in the country for more than a couple of weeks.
Yeah, they get their boots on the ground in New York and they get shipped right off to go fight the war.
Yeah,
and so you know it's a different era. So I'll be curious to see. Like this is my forget about the outcome. My legal geekdom is curious to see the standard of review they employ. They
yes.
employ this history. Intent and tradition type of test, or is it going to be something more conventional? You know, I'd be curious to see how it all plays out.
And this has been, like the Second Amendment, which you brought up, this has been one of those amendments. There are certain amendments that it seems like the Supreme Court historically, and I mean all the way 250 years ago, right? Like, 225. In the tenure of the Supreme Court's entire history, there are certain amendments that they seem, the word embarrassed isn't right, although there was a law review article called The Embarrassing Second Amendment. But there are some amendments that the Supreme Court seems to intentionally steer away from getting into. And this has been one of them. They yeah. really, and that's why there's a paucity of cases. You got to go back to this Wong Kim Ark case that's like 1868.
Well, what I don't
there
know,
there isn't a lot of.
What I don't know is how many cases they have turned down. So just to break this down, what happens is, say I'm representing somebody in the Ohio Supreme Court, and I'll just take a case I worked on. It was a guy who was charged with possessing a firearm while under the influence of alcohol in his own home. He's cleaning his shotgun, and he was wasted. That was the evidence. And I tried to make the argument that prosecuting that guy violated the Second Amendment because he had a right to carry his gun or have his gun for all sorts of reasons. So it was applied to him. Anyway, I go argue in the Ohio Supreme Court. I lose. I ask the U.S. Supreme Court by a petition for certiorari to review the case. They decline the case. So I would be curious to know in this context how many cases involving this issue or something akin or similar to this issue the Supreme Court has turned down. Because you're right. There are hotbed issues the Supreme Court tends to trend.
Yeah.
And the Sixth Amendment has been one in recent years. In the 70s, it was the Fourth and Fifth, the Sixth Amendment, or the Fourth and Fifth Amendments, you know, the Miranda, the car stops, all that stuff sort of came out in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And so I'd be curious to see. I can maybe do that research. I can have Troy over there, our young law student.
Yeah.
Check it out.
I yearn for the research.
Yes, I see the wincing.
To see if how many cases involving this issue or something similar to this issue the Supreme Court has been asked to review but declined.
Turning to another issue, Steve, and I know you'll love this issue, but we talk a lot in the First Amendment about separation of church and state. And this past week, there's been this...
down in Tennessee?
Tete-a-tete between Trump and the Pope.
Oh, I got you.
And the U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops has weighed in, and there's no more liberal group of people than the Catholic bishops. But at any rate, basically, if it is, I know you're a World War II scholar, and I'm really interested in World War I and World War II and how it shaped the modern world that we're in now. Pope Pius the 12th. Has historically been excoriated by scholars for supposedly, and you know, this is still debated, so I use the word supposedly because I don't know where to come down on it, but there's a viewpoint out there that he did not, as Pope during the Nazi era, do enough to combat the Nazi regime and morally, you know, state with absolute clarity and on a regular basis his position against the Holocaust and against Nazism and against the pogroms on gypsies and the mentally retarded and the infirm and the elderly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's this criticism that the Pope back then didn't speak up against war crimes and speak up against crimes against humanity perpetrated by Nazi Germany. And yet, it seems like the media is in support of the church at this point, calling Trump's actions in Iran an unjust war. That's an unjust war. That's what the Catholic bishops are saying. There was a panel of three of them on being interviewed on CNN, and then the Pope has been crossing swords with Trump. And basically, I can see now why it was so important in our First Amendment to basically say the United States should not have an official church. There should be no establishment. Because this is the kind of crap that, can you imagine if we were like England or like Germany, where for years, you know, German taxpayers supported the Lutheran Church,
right?
And in England, the Church of England.
Well, I mean, look, this is
crazy.
This goes way back to like King Henry VIII.
Yes,
you know, and even Henry II.
Yeah,
against Thomas à Becket because, well, Henry II was, he was the guy who sort of took control of the justice system in England. And, and there was something called benefit of clergy that, or criminal, the criminal clergy is what he would, I think was the term. So he was trying to eliminate some. So look, these kind of conflicts go way back.
Yeah, the Pope wouldn't give Henry a divorce.
And Henry VIII couldn't get his divorce or annulment, rather, because that was against the Catholic tradition.
Yeah.
So what did he do? He just replaced him and made himself the king.
Okay, we'll kill all the priests and we're no longer a Catholic country.
Yeah,
you know?
we'll just get rid of it.
I'll make my church.
I'll make myself the head of the church. And so, you know, I look at this Trump-Pope debate sort of with that lens. And I don't care what the Pope has to say about politics. I never cared what the Pope. I'm not Catholic.
Yeah.
So I really could care less. And in fact, I like to think that I have the mainstream view on that.
Most Catholics don't think the Pope should be weighing in on politics.
In the same vein, I think Trump needs to get his thumb off the Twitter finger.
No question.
Because he has no business arguing with the Pope. He could just. It's one of those things where.
A lot of Catholics would agree with you, and they would say, and I've been reading some of the commentators that are Catholic, you don't have to swing at every pitch, right? So the Pope comes out and says, war is bad. And if I was Trump, I'd say, I agree.
I agree.
100%. I totally agree.
That's why we're going to try to end this thing as fast as
exactly.
we can.
Exactly. That's right. And we're trying to use pinpoint targeting. We're trying to take out infrastructure and not hurt people, and blah, blah, blah.
But
I don't know why he couldn't just do that instead of engaging.
The problem is this with Trump.
He likes to fight.
The same character traits that have made him so successful in getting stuff done, if you want to call it that,
you're right.
Are the same character traits that cause him to do this.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't care. He digs his heels in and that's it. So he doesn't have, and look, if you could say nothing else about the man, at least you know what you got. At least you know what you got.
I guess what hurts me as an American, because I support our troops. I support, you know, when our troops are deployed, okay, my heart goes with them. My loyalty goes with them. And I don't think America, in my opinion, has ever fought an unjust war. Now, that's because I'm a flag-waving patriot, and maybe I'm ignorant of some of the, you know, the South American, you know, where we've gone into, I don't know, Colombia, whatever. And we can argue that some things were unjust or whatever we want, or dropping the atomic bomb was unjust. We can argue those points, and that's valid to argue that. And I like to explore ethics and morality. But Steve, if I was constructing a brief, if you assigned me, Norm, I want you to write a brief as the attorney for the Department of War on justify this war in Iran. Write up a brief about why it is just for us to have gone in there. I can almost not come up with a stronger scenario that nuclear weapons were imminent. They threatened to use them. They threatened ethnic cleansing to wipe the Jews off the face of the earth. So this goes right back to Pius XII during the Nazi era. And the October 7th thing was sponsored by Iran. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, you could just build an incredible case. And I wonder what the F the Catholic bishops and the Pope don't see just on a logical basis.
Well, it's,
what do they not see that I see?
They are just... See, but there's, I've listened to the talking heads on this.
What could be more just?
You know, and they're ignoring the fact that Iran killed 30,000 of its own. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
So I can see it. And they're taking the,
homosexuals?
They're sort of doing the same thing with immigration.
Stones women?
Know, they're taking up these causes. But I think there's also a lot of stuff that they agree with Trump or they agree with the what's going on, they being the Catholic Church. So I guess I look at it this way. It doesn't matter to me what the Catholic Church has to say about any of it. And I don't think, despite the other side's commentary on it, that it's going to impact Trump's ratings a whole lot, I think.
Oh, yeah, and I'm not worried about that. I get you. The other thing the Pope said, he weighed in on the immigration thing. And I would just say to the people who run the Vatican, and again, I am a serious Catholic. You know, I go to church and I believe in Catholicism. But I would just say to the Catholic Church, you know, you guys have Swiss guards guarding your
pretty tall walls, right?
You got tall walls. How many illegal immigrants are you admitting?
Homan had, did you hear Homan's commentary on this? Tom
I'm
Homan.
Like, dude, you are, you know, like glass house, man.
Tom
like,
Homan had some great about? Commentary on this. He goes, I just urge them to explore this deeper. You know, so I guess at any rate, I think this will be a nothing burger at the end of the day. But it does, you did bring up something that I think is worthy of some discussion.
And well, thank you.
You said, well, not just, you
no,
always.
I know how you know.
Anyway, you said you support, you don't think we've ever fought an unjust war. I don't know for sure, but I know this, whatever war we fight, I support the United States. And I think that's really what you're trying to say.
That is what I'm trying to say.
And there are people out there that are sort of turning this and they want us to lose. You know, it's they're against the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
This is insane, people. This is our kind. Fetterman was great on this. Fetterman's like, look, I mean, he not only lays out the reasons for the war, he goes, but look, this I'm country first, party second.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we look at this, you and I both.
Right.
I'm not a dogma carrying Republican Party guy. If I see something I don't like, I'm calling it out.
Absolutely.
And I'm not going to just ascribe to a set of agendas or an agenda just because that is identified with this side. I mean, I think we should.
My country's not a Republican country. It's a country for all of us.
Right.
And I support America, whether the president is a Democrat or a Republican. That part doesn't matter. When Lyndon Johnson was prosecuting the Vietnam War, I wanted us to succeed.
Right.
And then I wanted us to get out and come home.
You can say both those things. You can say, I'm for America, but I'm against the war. Fine. But it doesn't mean I want America to lose the war, and
exactly.
I want America to lose its power in the world, and I want America to fail.
Right.
Like I
and soldiers coming home in caskets.
Right. It's just it's so stupid, and it's just become this insanity.
It has been.
Because they hate Trump so much.
Yeah. They've.
But
they've,
I think there's more to it behind the scenes. But that's the forefront of the battle right there.
Yeah.
If Trump's doing it, we hate it. It's nuts.
It's just unbelievable.
Because Fetterman also pointed out that Harris ran on the platform that Iran's the biggest threat in the world right now. You know, it's like she was saying such things. I don't remember that specifically.
And Hillary. They all were
And then they were giving him money, but there's that.
Well, speaking we largely are a Republican-run state here in Ohio. And you know, two of the most serious things that voters are going to be presented with, if assuming enough people sign the petition to get on the ballot, this measure, constitutional amendment, it'll be against any new big data centers. So whether it's marijuana, abortion, data centers, or the property tax is the other big one that may be on the ballot this fall. Those things, and we've talked about this before, Steve, those things reflect a failure of our General Assembly and our governor to grasp these issues and address them.
Well, these aren't constitutional issues. These are legislative issues.
And
they're getting
the price of electricity.
Right, this is stupid.
It's stupid.
I have railed against this since the dawn of my legal career. It's like we are creating constitutional issues out of legislative issues. And the problem with that is you don't get the debate on the General Assembly floor. There's no easy way to change it. You know, the legislative issue is one where, like abortion is a legislative issue.
Right.
You want to be able to say, look, as science changes, we want to be able to revisit this issue.
Right.
And
spell out
the amount of taxes is a legislative issue because what about inflation? What about this? What about that? What about, you know, it's like these are things that are fungible, changeable, underlying factual issues.
Right.
And if you codify them in a constitution is supposed to be a foundational framework, not a revised code.
Right. So we're using a sledgehammer to kill flies, in effect. So
like making gambling legal by a constitutional amendment is. Now, saying the General Assembly can make, we can say it doesn't violate the Constitution, gambling doesn't.
Yeah.
Which gives the General Assembly a way to deal with it if that needed to be done.
Yeah.
But then to legislate where the casinos are and all this other crap. And they did it just.
Well, it's like the pot thing. So, you know, people thought, okay, we're going to legalize recreational use. And you've seen how the government then, instead of being proactive in dealing with recreational use and doing it legislatively and through the governor's office, you know, with regulation, the people got this thing passed via constitutional amendment because our government wasn't acting. Mm-hmm. And so people took it into their own hands, passed kind of a, it's kind of a sloppy constitutional amendment. And now the government is doing what it should have done originally. And they're nitpicking around this constitutional amendment in ways that are probably unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's a pretty clear statement. I mean, it's a broad brush statement. And the argument is, well, because it lacks specificity, it's up to us now to interpret that.
Yeah.
So we're going to do all this regulating. Well, they should have done that beforehand. And then that would be a lot neater, more, you know, like it would make more sense. What bothers me about this data center, so nobody has talked on this show more than me about Intel and the data centers and what has exploded across Ohio. And what bothers me about it is there may be situations, there may be communities in Ohio that really want to welcome a factory, really want to welcome a data center, right? And want a big data center. And this constitutional amendment would prevent that.
Yep.
And I can see where a community, so what I am for is openness, transparency, no NDAs, lots of community participation in advance of the data center so that people can carve out, oh, you're going to put an earthen berm all the way around it so we don't hear the noise. Oh, you're going to get your own water. Oh, you're going to discharge water through some kind of filter thing that's state of the art and it'll be as pure as when it came out of the ground. Oh, you're going to have your own mini nuke plant so my electrical rates don't go up. This, that, the other thing could be worked out in a transparent way where a community, maybe not mine, but maybe somebody else's, would be sanguine with having a data center.
Well, what you're really
saying
is,
and now we're preventing it.
You want to, the problem with data centers is not data centers. The problem with data centers is the corruption that resulted from bringing data centers into communities without notification and giving everybody a fair understanding of what's going on in an open and public debate.
You said it right.
And now what they're doing is just getting rid of data centers. It's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, you know, right.
All you needed to do was say, if there's going to be a data center, it has to be open to public debate and discussion first.
Yes. Well, I don't get what the secrecy is all about, because now there is this, almost nationally, there's this aversion to data centers.
It's just like there's this giant, again, it's doing the same thing in reverse. It's the government putting its giant thumb on the scale and monkeying with it.
Right.
And if you say no data centers, that changes the economic system. And if you say, if you sneak them in and don't tell anybody, it's the same thing in reverse. So.
It's the same thing. And this property tax ban, my property taxes, I don't know about yours, Steve, mine are too high. They are too high. And now I'm still gainfully self-employed, so I'm still earning a living. But I feel for people my age and older that are on fixed incomes and
they can make it work before their land was worth $5 million, but now that their land is worth $5 million, they can't make it work.
Well, and you're also being taxed on a prospective value. So I haven't sold, so think of this. You haven't sold your house, but yet you're being taxed as on the value of your house as what the value would be if you sold it. Okay. What the auditor says is the actual value of your house minus some discounts, homesteading, whatever. And they come up with a number that your house would be worth if you sold it. And then you're taxed on that value. But this is just like taxing us on the value of your savings account or your stock, your 401k. You haven't cashed it in yet. You haven't turned it into income, and yet you're being taxed every year again and again on the value of that property. And so it's unrealized income. And it's just, so it's fundamentally avaricious of the government to do something like that. And because it's so off the hook now, People just want to out of hand ban property taxes. But yet that's how we fund fire departments, and that's how we pave township roads, and that's how we pay police, you know, in townships and counties where there's not a direct income tax like there are in cities for the Columbus PD. But out in a township like Blendon Township, they support their police department through property taxes.
Well, I mean, how is she going to pay for free grocery stores? See what I did?
Excellent
there?
Point.
You see that transition?
Yes, it was.
You see that transition?
Yes.
So it turns out Madami's rolling it out, folks, rolling it out. Free groceries for all. All you got to do is go to New York and get it. And you got to somehow put the $30 million bill to build them. How they're going to do that, I don't know. Probably property taxes, but only for the white rich people.
Oh, God.
And then you're going to go get free groceries. What could possibly go wrong?
And he wants to build five of these, and this is just one of them.
This is just one of them.
$30 million. By 2029.
I wonder what a Kroger costs around here. $30 million seems like that'd be way too high.
Yeah, off the hook.
Yeah,
right.
So I mean, how are you going to pay for the groceries if you're the government?
I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine going to a grocery store run by people who have no profit incentive?
In Ohio, it costs $39 million to build a Kroger.
Oh, okay. So that's right on target then.
So you're just saying, you know, when you think about this, people who have no incentive, right, for quality control, for, you know, competition across the street, there's no profit incentive. You know they're going to be unionized. So whether you do a good job or a shitty job, you can pay.
It doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't make
food
any.
Food can be spoiled, not on the shelves. It won't matter.
It's like working at the DMV in New York State.
Look,
it'll just be another.
Don't take it. It's free anyway.
Right. Oh, those bananas have bruises?
I don't think they're building Kroger's, though. Think about, like, a city. I mean, you can't just plop a Kroger downtown New York. I think they're building, like, Whole Foods, which I know this isn't really making it much better, but it costs only about $7 million to build one of those.
Well, so yeah.
It's not, like, one of the super centers.
Yeah.
I think what Mamdani has in mind is something like on an Aldi's scale. You know, like a stripped-down basic, hey, we got meat, potatoes, milk, eggs, you know. And
a bread line.
You know, and they're not, what? They're probably not going to have any property taxes. They're not going to have any income. Like, so imagine just this. It just dawned on me.
Yeah.
What if he just said to Aldi, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but it would certainly be a measure better.
Sure.
Hey, Aldi, why don't you come on in and we're going to give you some tax credits.
Right.
We're going to give you some subsidies.
Exactly.
We're going to, in fact, we'll clear some land for you to build a brand new Aldi store right here and incentivize you that way.
Right.
Because guess what? You people who have been running grocery stores for the last 50 years probably know a thing or two about how the business works.
Right.
More so than I,
and
who
they have
nothing in my life.
And an economies of scale, right,
right,
Steve?
Right.
I mean, when Aldi's buys bananas, right, they're buying them by the shipload. What's one grocery store run by the city of New York?
They're going to steal them from the farmers. They're going to say, farmers, you can see how the dominoes fall. Cost too much for milk, so now we're going to force the farmers to charge us less for milk. So what's going to happen? The farmers aren't going to make any milk, and then it's going to become scarce, and the price of milk is going to go through the freaking roof. And then they're going to say, well, now we need to take over the dairy farms.
By the way, you have a little history. I think you've talked about where you went to, was it Lithuania?
Estonia.
Estonia, okay, yeah. When it was then a Soviet satellite.
Right after it switched over.
Okay, so pretty hot on the heels. So, you know, I toured all over Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union. So I've been in former state-run grocery stores. Dude.
You don't like them.
They suck.
It's not what you...
There is nothing in
look,
there.
Look, there's these famous stories of back in the day. Russian premier, or the Russian people coming over here and going in our grocery stores and be like, holy crap. Like, how is all this stuff? I mean, and look, in Estonia when I was there, what I saw was all the remnants of the bad communism.
Right.
But, you know, they did have some grocery stores by the time I was there.
But yeah.
Little
threadbare.
What could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong for you give a guy like Mamdani, who has never run a business his entire life, control of a huge business? Norm, you run a business, and your business is buying and selling widgets, whatever it is.
Right, yeah.
I run a business, but it's a professional business, professional services.
Yeah.
There is no way on the planet I would feel comfortable coming in and running your business. I would be I would run that into the iceberg almost the first night.
There's a learning curve.
I don't know how much stuff you need to buy. I don't know the price you need to sell it for. I don't know where you do. I don't know what supplies
you need. While to spool up, sure.
And even then, like, you have people, there's a reason that CFOs and CEOs bounce from company because they have experience. They know what they're doing. And, you know, some are better than others. I get it. And you can even make an argument that they're overpaid. I get it, but don't pay them as much if you don't like that.
Yeah.
But thinking that the government can come in and tell me how much I need to charge for DUI defense, or how much I need, how many paper clips I have to buy a month, or what is my cybersecurity supposed to cost, or what does it cost for memberships for my practice management platforms, and what's the best one? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's taken me 31 years to figure that stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah. The, another hot story, just getting back to Ohio, that I think you probably have some comments on. It came out today. They settled with another 13, what they call survivors. And I don't want to make fun of that word. I think it's a little strong, but victims of the Richard Strauss, this doctor who, you know, went over the line into sexual abuse of Ohio State athletes is the accusation. Some 371, I think, roughly, I think that's the number, claimants, and Ohio State has settled with about half of them. So far, a total of $61 million, and they settled with another 13 this week for, I think, $1.8 million or something thereabouts.
Yep.
And it's just, I think about this, and I think about, you know, guys that are wrestling or playing football or basketball, and I just... I can't get it out of my head how a young man who's obviously very, you know, strong, and this guy, this doctor, was, you know, I just can't imagine what they could do in an examination room that you would not immediately be reporting his actions back to somebody in authority.
Well, I think
I don't understand the facts here.
I don't understand the facts either, but I will say this. It's probably like anything. There's probably, I would classify, I try to put these things in categories, probably three categories. There's probably clear, obvious victims, right?
Yeah.
So people who were just patently abused, whether they were male or females or whatever.
And they look up to doctors and think, well, the doctor must know what he's...
Whatever the facts are, they're probably obvious victims. Then there's probably on the other end, people that are just stretching claims to make some money. Fair enough. And then there's probably people in the middle who are just like, you know,
they're in a class.
Something weird happened. I happened to be part of this class. I didn't really say much at the time. It didn't bug me that much at the time, but it did happen. You know, so that's the nature of the beast. And now you've got the government at the reins of the settlement. Which is, you know, I'm taking nothing away from the plaintiffs, but the government's at the reins of the settlement, and now that immediately injects a political agenda into it. So Ohio State's going to do whatever they can to get out of this as clean as they can. If that means paying everybody off, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah,
and that may be okay.
And that seems to be what they're.
Yeah, doing. That may be okay given their business model, but they got a lot of stink on them right now up at Ohio State with the Wexner stuff, with the Epstein stuff, and now this.
And so, the president. Yeah. Who resigned under some kind of cloud with a business relationship with somebody.
So just look, they're in the midst of a stink. Sometimes it's just buy it out, just pay it off.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. Buy it out. Yeah, yeah. It just fee structure wise, I know you don't. You do defense. You're a criminal defense attorney. What would I'm just curious. So let's suppose one of these victims gets. Just to make a nice fat round number, $1 million settlement from Ohio State. Would it be a contingency thing?
Yeah, generally that's going to be a contingency fee. So look, they're suing Ohio State, which is generally you're suing the state of Ohio. That means you end up in a place called the Court of Claims, affectionately sometimes known as the Court of No Claims or the Court of Clams. You don't get a jury. And you tend not to have as much exposure, or the state doesn't have as much exposure as a private doc would. So what I don't know here, because I'm not in the middle of this tort litigation, is whether the plaintiffs are tapping into the doctor's private malpractice insurance plus the state, if they're only suing the state, meaning Ohio State, or if they've got an individual claim against the DOC as well, that would increase the settlement. But that aside, generally a third, lawyers will charge a third for a personal injury claim or an injury claim.
Okay.
But here there's probably a class action.
Oh.
So it wouldn't surprise me if there's more than, if one lawyer has more than one plaintiff.
Okay.
And then you end up, like anybody who's ever gotten a notice, this guy could be wrong about this, but
yeah.
Anybody who's ever got a notice, like you're part of a class, do you want to opt in or opt out?
Yeah.
So it could be that all these potential people that had potential exposure from this guy had got a notice that said, look, we understand that you were treated by Dr. Strauss and you are a potential victim. Please contact if you want to opt in. So there could be something like that. Now that gets expensive for the lawyers because those notification requirements are pricey.
Yeah.
Now I don't know if there's a class action here, but anyway, it's typically a third. And then they take expenses too.
Okay.
And
so it could end up, I mean, expenses are substantial.
It can be.
I mean, you know, depositions, God.
Well, depositions are what I'm talking about because that's part of the legal fee. So my time going through the case is covered by the contingency fee.
Okay.
But if I have to hire you, an expert, to provide an opinion about a medical malpractice case, that can get pricey.
Okay.
Or if I need 10 of you.
So it could be 50%.
It could be sometimes.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to do winners and losers?
Winners and losers.
You know? I got to mention one last real quick Ohio thing. So the band AC/DC is coming to play at Ohio Stadium on July the 15th. And I have this is very minor brush with Brian Johnson, the lead singer, where both of us race, in road racing cars. So I've met him once or twice. And it's exciting to me that he's going to fill Ohio Stadium. And these guys are pretty old now. And one of the founders of AC/DC, Malcolm Young, passed away
last year, right? 2 years ago?
2017. Of dementia.
It's been that long?
Of dementia. Yeah, dementia. A progressive brain disorder. And Brian Johnson founded a charity where a lot of his money, this foundation, goes into that. So when I met him, it was at this inaugural event in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where I'm not bragging, but I did win that entire event with my race car. So I get up on stage, there's Brian Johnson, and he signs a book of his and hands it to me. And just, we kind of look at these guys as wild men, but at the end of the day, he drops all the F-bombs on stage and all that stuff. But, some of these guys really do good work. The John Lennon, for example, his charity was raising money for ballistic vests for the New York City cops before he died.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He had a charity to buy, because at the time, the department couldn't afford ballistic vests. So him and Yoko had this charity to buy vests for the cops in New York City. So, some of these musicians really do wonderful things, and some of them are whack jobs, but I just wanted to say, I'm probably going to get a ticket. They start at $91. It was a little high, but I'll have my little banner. Hey, Brian, do you remember me?
Troy, what you got, man?
I feel like my winner for the week was the moon people came back. I call them moon people.
For sure.
I think it's like a metrius or something.
They're called astronauts, dude.
Oh, astronauts. Okay, yeah.
Jiminy Christmas.
They came back. I'm happy we're back in space. I think it's awesome.
Right.
It's cool.
I'm
excited to see future moon missions. Low is, you guys are going to get this, really. It's like a younger thing. There's a guy named Klavikar, I think his name is how you pronounce it.
Huh.
It's a big meme thing. He accidentally overdosed yesterday. So,
I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you actually?
I did. I saw that news. Yeah.
Really? And passed away? Yeah. Overdosed and died?
No, he didn't die, but it's part of the meme culture.
Oh.
But yes.
Yeah. Now he was involved with Fuente. I mean, wasn't he in the limousine screaming Heil Hitler?
Maybe.
Yeah. Not maybe.
Can I?
He's one of that crew. Good company you keep over there.
I'm just following people on social media. He's an entertaining guy. That's it.
So that Artemis II mission. But so I'm right with you. Okay. But did it bug you just a little bit about the whole kind of like United Nations, we are the world, we're representing humanity? Hey, man, this was a frickin' American vehicle. Yeah, the European Space Agency did some work, and we had a Canadian.
Oh, screw them. They did nothing.
God dang it. This was frickin' NASA, and as the NASA...
This was America at its best.
Yeah, you know, like... I wanted just a wee little bit more flag waving.
It's not popular right now.
Yeah. No. Did it bug you at all? Or
so, I mean, I didn't really think about that at all because I didn't really know or care that anybody else was involved. I just immediately just thought it was America. So
okay.
I didn't give them.
So you took it that way. You were like, this was an American success.
Yeah, I didn't even know.
Okay. Sometimes you know, we get our microscope on. We don't see the big picture sometimes because look, the country just sees. It's not anybody else.
Yeah.
It's our astronauts over there.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, Neil Armstrong did say that it's one small step for a man. And I kind of was like, I winced a little. I'm like, Neil, it's one small step for an American.
Oh, well, that was implicit.
Okay.
Come on.
If my friends in Europe tried to say something to me like, oh, you're welcome for all of our help on the mission. I was like, dude, I didn't know you guys were even invited.
Well, actually.
You're welcome for help on the mission? What did you do?
Yeah.
The European Space Agency did design the living quarters, but that's also the part of the vehicle that they had the most problems with. So you have a little material on them if you decide to research it. The aspect that they worked on actually was the part that kind of...
Well, they didn't put what's it called? The dimensions in American. They put in their weird little measurements or whatever. I need
the metric.
The football fields. Like, how many football fields is bad? Those are the dimensions I needed.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, Troy, you didn't steal my thunder, but you got me into the storm. The bad here is Joy Behar showing up on The View. Good and saying, quote, Jesus himself did not run around saying, I am the Messiah, I am the Messiah. Well, it turns out, I'm listening to the Bible in Your podcast by Father Mike Schmitz, and I listened this morning to the Gospel of John, where repeatedly he says, I am the Son of Man. Yeah. I speak to you. I who speak to you am he.
And you would think Joy, a Catholic, would know that.
Right.
I mean, that's right there.
Before Abraham was, I am my father. Me. I mean, I've heard Muslims debate this too, that Jesus never claimed that he was God, but all you have to do is read the Gospel of John.
Dude. Look,
you can say that the Gospel of John is made up after the fact. Make that argument if you want.
Dude.
But he does.
You can go into I can think of several cathedrals and churches I've been in where there's a stained glass window of Jesus Christ. And he says, I am the Lord. I am the Son. I mean, it's right there. It's central. I mean, his claim to have been, that's what got him in trouble with who were the conservative Jews at the time that persecuted?
Turned the Pharisees. Right.
The Pharisees.
Right.
That's what got him in trouble, is he claimed to be
blasphemy.
The Son of God.
Right, it's blasphemy.
And they said, who are you?
They killed him for it. Well, the good news, of course, is that a co-host, Sarah Haynes, immediately said, that is, she points out, that is exactly what Jesus said.
That's exactly, that was the point.
Which is, in fact, what he said. Now, look, you can take issue with whether he is the Son of Man or the Son of God.
That's right.
You can take issues with whether John is reliable.
Oh, God.
But you can't take issue about what was said, or at least what's reported in there. Now, the good, Troy, along those lines, is that Victor Glover, a devout Christian, integrated his faith into the Artemis mission throughout of it. He took his Bible there and
he was excellent.
Had lots
of great stuff.
A very inspiring commentary about what he was observing and
without making it about him.
Yeah.
He was really fantastic.
He said there are no atheists in rockets. That's awesome. It's like there's no atheist in a foxhole.
Did you have a loser, Steve?
Yeah, my loser was Joy Behar.
Oh, Behar, right. Okay. My loser is Eric Swalwell. I mean,
come on, man. He's such a great loser.
It's colossal. I feel for the victims, and I don't understand, you know, again, this kind of goes back to lots of, you know, like that, the I say nutty, but that journalist lady that says Trump assaulted her at a department store.
Or Kavanaugh's accuser.
I don't understand these people that come out after 25, 30 years. This is like this is like 16 years ago or something, where this one lady claims that Swalwell raped her. And I'm like,
some of that, look, I defend these cases all the time. And I will say this, just because there's a delayed accusation doesn't mean it's false.
That's exactly right.
Just because there's a delayed accusation doesn't mean it's true.
But please, victims, because the evidence grows stale and the witnesses start dying off.
Yeah.
And your story gets fuzzier. But I get it, though.
You know, you talk to you.
That's
talk
why
to
there's
some...
a statute of limitations.
Well, there's not on those things.
But no, but that's why on most crimes.
Well, that's right.
There's a statute of limitations because the facts start getting frayed.
Look, there's a reason that we ended up with the Me Too era. There's a reason for it. Now, I'm not saying the Me Too era was a good, the pendulum, I think, went way too far in the
did.
Me Too era.
Yeah.
But there's always some reason why you get that
and
kind
let's
of
say,
backlash.
I know what you mean, but let's say it. What they were saying when it went too far is that you just have to believe women.
That's right. And the
if
reason,
they say it, it's true.
And the reason
and it's
it went
like,
so
well,
far
wait a minute.
That's
is
because
not testimony.
The reason it went that far is because for a long time, such accusations against powerful guys were getting rug swept. Now, what happens, though, is it opens
up. And
that's
up, true. That's
true,
too.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
What happens, though, is that then you get all these others that say they're victims and maybe they're not, or the accusations aren't so true anymore. Like, it doesn't make everything true and it doesn't make everything false. The Swalwell thing's an interesting dilemma for me, or an interesting observation for me, because it's almost like his party wants him out.
Oh, for sure.
You know, because right. was he making a run in California?
Well, they
I don't understand the dynamic.
My understanding is that the opposition research, so Steve Hilton and the other Republican, the two people who are leading overall in the race, happen to be two Republicans.
Would beat him.
And under California elections law, it's the top two people in the primary, and they can be of the same party. So you could have two Democrats mm-hmm. running against each other or two Republicans.
So it's one of those plurality type deals. Yeah.
And so right now, the two top polling people for governor in California are both Republicans. And what I had heard is that Steve Hilton, and I forget the name of the other guy, former sheriff of L.A. County, I think, or Riverside County. Anyway, those two guys had the Swalwell goods. These women went to them and said, we want to crush this guy. And what they were going to do was release it in the general election because they figure we're going to be up against Swalwell. So let's blow this thing up after he's the nominee.
Right, because then, yeah.
And then they're locked in. Then they'd have to do a write-in campaign. So I think that you're right. I think Pelosi, Schiff, Ruben Gallego, all these people decided to blow up Swalwell before that.
Yeah, that just shows you, man. It's just such
it's vicious.
Political.
After using him all these years right. as the Trump, you know, right. like the SmackDown guy.
Right.
You know.
Right. All right. Well, look, that's going to wrap it up. This has been another riveting weekly dose of common sense. I hope you enjoyed it. I did. Norm's got his pocket constitution. This is what he does when he's not on the air. He just opens up his constitution and reads it. Troy's over there getting ready for the bar exam. And I am just here week in and week out bringing you common sense right from the middle till now.